Augustine Burroughs is the author of the autobiographical works Running with Scissors, Dry, Magical Thinking, Possible Side Effects, and A Wolf at the Table, all of which were New York Times bestsellers. Running with Scissors remained on the Times bestseller list for over two consecutive years and was made into a Golden Globe-nominated film starring Annette Bening. His only novel, Cellevision, is currently in development as a series for NBC, Dry. Augustine's memoir of his alcoholism and recovery is being developed by Showtime. In addition, Burroughs is currently creating an original primetime series for CBS. His latest book is Lust and Wonder. In Lust and Wonder, he chronicles the development and demise of the different relationship he's had while living in New York. He examines what it means to be in love, what it means to be in lust, and what it means to figure it all out. Augustine Burroughs will be at the Northshire Bookstore next Wednesday at 7 o'clock to talk about and sign the new book, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Augustine Burroughs to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a delight to have you on the program. At what point did you think, okay, I will write about basically my love life?
It was several years ago, and I had actually tried, I'd been focusing on fiction, on writing a novel, and I didn't love the way that direction of that novel was going, so I started a different novel in a completely different direction, and I also didn't feel great about that. And so I came to this sort of plateau in my writing where it just wasn't flowing the way I wanted it to flow, and that's because I told myself, I sort of bullied myself and said, no more memoirs, you've got to write novels now. And then I was out to dinner with some friends, and they suggested, you know, why don't you write about what happened after Dry, because you've been sober since 1999. And that just kind of opened the floodgates up. I realized that I really didn't want to move into fiction yet until, you know, as a memoirist, I had explored all the stuff that had been going on in my life since getting sober, which didn't turn out to be as perfect as I thought it would be, you know?
You mentioned the foray into novel writing. Cellevision is your only novel to date. Did you enjoy that process, or do you feel when you were writing Lust and Wonder that you're on more familiar ground?
I'm definitely on more familiar ground when I'm writing memoir. But I had a wonderful time writing Cellevision. I mean, it was not only my only novel, but it was the first book that I ever wrote. And I hadn't planned on writing a book, you know. And I talk about this experience in Lust and Wonder, where it's really discovering writing through Cellevision is really what got me and has kept me sober for so many years. And that was something unexpected, because I'd been through rehab, you know. I'd been in recovery. I understood sort of how to do that, and I relapsed. And it was really, I needed to sort of find writing. Writing was the sort of thing I think I'd been searching for through with alcohol, and writing was just it's almost like writing could scratch the itch that alcohol could never quite reach. But yes, it's definitely, I'm more comfortable writing memoir, just because I've been doing it for so long. I mean, I used to write in sort of a journal when I was 8 and 9 years old. It's something that's been with me my whole life.
You do point out, as you suggested just a moment ago, that struggle with addiction and sobriety that you wrote about in Dry plays a fairly prominent role in Lust and Wonder. It's very much the backbone of the story, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. You know, I think that when, you know, after I started writing and had been sober for several months and realized, you know, well, at least for now, it seems like drinking is out of my life, I really expected, you know, my life to really clean up. I thought my decisions would be better, and, you know, not that I thought my life would be perfect, but I certainly didn't expect to make so many big mistakes, you know, the kinds of mistakes in terms of, you know, my love life or relationship life that I think I would have made when I was drinking. And, you know, I was really kind of surprised at how messy sober life could be, and how far from perfect, you know, and how all the pieces did not just tumble into place like a puzzle, you know. And it sounds kind of silly to say that, but it's, you know, maybe I just had sort of an idealistic version of what sobriety would be like, you know, because I did believe that alcohol had been such a huge problem. It really, I could sort of trace so many, it seemed like, all of my issues right back to the bottle. But in fact, that wasn't the case, you know, and I still had, you know, I still had so many flaws and some made so many mistakes. But I also did some great things and made some great choices that I never could have made when I was drinking. And so that is a thread in the book. You know, it's sort of, it's long-term sobriety. I mean, that's what it really looks like. And long-term sobriety is not always pretty, you know?
Is it a conscious decision when you sort of, okay, you get your life to that point back together and you are sober, so you say that you are ready for a relationship, you are ready for love, or does it just happen?
No, in my case, I'd been sober for 9 months and sold my first novel to a publisher and found a literary agent, actually, who sold my novel to my publisher. So I decided, okay, now I'm ready and now I'm going to find someone. So I definitely had an itinerary, you know, and I was pushing for it. Which, you know, in retrospect, was probably not the best idea, as opposed to letting things just unfold organically and, you know, see who I meet. And I was really, I sort of wanted everything now, and I wanted it all lined up. I was looking for love, but I was looking for security, too. And I was looking for something you can't get from someone else, which is to be comfortable in my own skin, with my own self, in my own head. And I just felt like I could only do that with someone else. Therefore, I've got to find someone who's incredibly stable, who's unflappable, who's, you know, going to sort of take care of everything. And, building, you know, finding a relationship and then building it, making it work. You know, these are very sort of construction terms of, you know, building and making sure it's solid. And those are things, you know, we can't make sure of. And, you know, we can't sort of guarantee, especially out of the box, like I tried to do it.
And then you have that moment that happens to many of us in life where we look and say, okay, well, it was in front of me all along.
Yeah. I mean, it was, you know, when I met my literary agent, you know, I had just had the biggest crush on him too as a person. But obviously I can't have that crush. I can't have those feelings because he's now going to be my literary agent. And I want writing to be the one thing I don't screw up. You know, I've screwed up so much in my life. I've made so many bad choices. I've just made so many messes. And here I finally got this agent who sold this book. It's like a dream come true, and I really don't want to mess it up. So I just decided to unfeel those feelings, to not feel them, to crush them down. And, you know, I was pretty successful at that for a while.
In looking at the relationships and writing about them, as you do in this memoir, do you learn even more? Do you see trends? Do you see the mistakes? Do you see, you're able to look at it with
open
eyes?
I do, and you know, yes, that's absolutely true. When I look at my behavior over the years, you know, on the page in front of me, when it's all sort of strung together like a necklace, I can absolutely, I get so much insight into my own behavior and what I've done. And, you know, I can look back, I mean, here in a book, it's just, you know, to a certain page and think, that's the moment I should have actually left that relationship. I mean, I spent 10 years in a relationship where it was with someone who really sort of could tolerate me, but I don't really believe really wanted to be with me. I pushed, you know, I really pushed and, you know, yes, we are compatible. It will work. And we just weren't. We weren't compatible and it did not work. And when I look back on that, there were so many signs early on in dating, you know, let alone before it was even established as a relationship, but just dating, where now and through the process of writing it and looking at it, I can see, well, that's where it should have ended right there, you know. It really should have ended after the third date. I mean, it didn't need to go on beyond that. And yet, I didn't have that insight at the time. I didn't have that perspective at the time. I had sort of a different agenda, an agenda of wanting security, an agenda of wanting happily ever after, or of wanting something permanent or stability. You know, stability was very, very important to me back then, because I don't have that in my childhood. I don't have that in my past. And so it's very instructive. It certainly is.
In writing about Dennis, who you've written about in so much of your other work, and your readers know him.
Right.
And as you write that, as this relationship goes on, we see Dennis, who you say in the book didn't even see how brutally unhappy he was, masquerading as someone who cared. So you reach that point before he does.
I do. That's right.
Is that really difficult to then not only convey that to him, but then realize what a long-term relationship means for you to avoid that in the future?
It was terrible. I mean, it really was. I just don't know how else to describe it. But I had wanted it to work so much, and I worked so hard. And we, you know, I think we both did to make this relationship into one that would last. And there was so much I turned away from and couldn't see. I couldn't bring myself to see, you know. And I was so busy that I couldn't see how unhappy he was. But it's a hard thing to do because, you know, we're told, certainly by psychologists and the media and sort of, you know, that relationships are about compromise. So that was another sort of crutch that I could use, because we certainly had compromise. But how much compromise? You know, how much compromise is too much compromise? How do you know if you're compromising way too much, or more than you should, or more than other people? You know, what are you willing to live with and put up with? And I just found that I couldn't be somebody else. There was so much about me that was going to drive him crazy, and that wasn't going to change, because there's just too much about me that I think made him really unhappy, and that I couldn't possibly change, even if I had wanted to. So, you know, that realization meant, oh no, you know, my life's going to blow up. My life's going to crumble, you know, and I'm going to have to rebuild it.
It has been said, I think, when you look at this book, as much as we look at so much of your work, as we always, because we read about you and we care about you, that we seek the happy ending, which it comes in a form of contentment, I guess.
It does. You know, I feel like I did make one really, I finally trusted my instincts, you know, and I feel like I did it at the very, very nick of time in my life, at this late stage in my life. I just, even though it, in some ways it just didn't make sense and it seemed impossible and it seemed that I couldn't love the person I did in fact love, I went with it. And I just trusted my, you know, that sort of the truth when you feel it, when you land on something that's true, or at least I do, it's almost a physical sensation in the chest. It's almost like the bones of your sternum vibrate. You know, you can feel it. And that's what I felt, and I hung on to it, and I went with it, and it turned out to be absolutely life-changing in the best possible way. Not that I had to change, and that was really what was so different and so special and so amazing about this relationship that unfolded, was that it was just one huge sigh of relief. I mean, I'm with my absolute best friend in the world, who knows all the flaws. You know, it's like I wrote in one of my books, I myself am made entirely of flaws stitched together with good intentions. And here's someone who completely gets that, you know, and it's great.
Well, the name of the new book is Lust and Wonder, and Augustine Burroughs will be at Northshire Bookstore in Saratoga Springs, New York, on Wednesday, the 13th of April, so next Wednesday at 7 o'clock. And you can find out more about tickets and about the event by going to northshire.com. Northshire.com. Augustine Burroughs at Northshire Bookstore in Saratoga Springs on Wednesday, April 13th at 7 o'clock. The name again of the new book, Lust and Wonder. Augustine Burroughs, it'll be great to have you in town. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning, and best of luck with the book and your travels.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and I'm excited to come out.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, Augustine Burroughs at Northshire Bookstore in Saratoga Springs, New York, on Wednesday, April 13th at 7 o'clock. You can find out more at northshire.com. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.